The man who is wise, therefore, will see his life as more like a reservoir than a canal. The canal simultaneously pours out what it receives. The reservoir retains the water till it is filled, then discharges the overflow without loss to itself. Today, there are many in the church who act like canals. The reservoirs are far too rare. You too must learn to await this fullness before pouring out your gifts. Do not try to be more generous than God.
Friends, it's Morgan and Sherry, and welcome back to another episode of the Become Good Soil podcast. This podcast was born over a decade ago out of the relentless desire, the deep curiosity to recover the ancient path and process of masculine initiation. As it's evolved, as it's matured, as it's made itself known to us, it's become more and more evident that it's really a podcast for men and for women regarding masculine and feminine initiation. The centerpiece in the doorway has been the masculine soul, but we're becoming more and more aware that it's essential as we mature as a community of believers to explore the nuances that are deeply masculine and deeply feminine. So with that in mind, Cherbear, welcome back. It's good to do another podcast episode with you.
Hey, buddy.
This is being recorded in summer of 2024, and my hope is that it will be aired in time to let the Become Good Soil Intensive alumni, which is a growing community of 735 like-hearted men around the globe from over 14 years of intensives, for this community to be invited into a deeper dive this coming year from October through March, a six-month online intensive immersion into the deeper things. We're taking a deeper cut. It will be a communal. It'll be relational. It'll be deeply reflective and involve monthly gatherings with cohorts and daily opportunities to do less, but to dig deeper. And the opportunity will be to jump into all 6 months and take a choreographed journey with a particular group if you're willing and able to make that a priority. It also can be something you can dive into 1 month at a time. You can grab the month of November, you can grab the month of January. The spirit is to include as many of the intensive alumni as possible. And we wanted to announce that on the podcast because over the last 14 years, the nature of internet communication and contact information, we've lost touch with some. So if you're out there and you're a faithful BGS intensive alumni that's traveling with us, but not directly connected with us personally, we want you to know about that. And if you're interested, you can go to the Become Good Soil alumni page and you can find out more. So we would love to join you for a deeper dive in the next coming school year.
It's exciting, buddy. Did you share what the name is?
It's called The Grove. And it's borrowed from this emerging idea that a tree is never meant to grow alone, that God has the best ideas, and a grove of trees is what's essential for a healthy landscape, a healthy biodiversity, and a healthy creation. And so we're very interested in exploring the deeper work of God as a fellowship and as a grove.
Wow, that is so cool. Friends, recently I came to Morgan and asked if we could record a conversation on about the last year of his journey with God, and specifically about a facet of it that was included something called praxis. So praxis is an effort from the spiritual formation branch of Denver Seminary to offer a spiritual formation experience for the Front Range of Colorado to men and women who are seeking to be apprentices of Jesus. And Morgan applied to it and was selected to do it after being referred to this to praxis by several friends of ours. So I've had the privilege of watching Morgan over the last year. The way that my husband does, I have to brag on him for a second, is that when he does something, he does it with such signature conscientiousness and earnestness and thoroughness and sincerity of heart that, honestly, friends, is nothing I've ever seen before in everything he does. And he brought that same heart to this experience. So he really took it to heart and gave himself to it. And it's been a privilege to watch. So I wanted, Morgan, for us to connect and ask if you'd be willing to share both. Tell us about the experience and, yeah, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, thanks, Sherry. I was surprised by the ask, but as I prayed about it, it just felt kind and inclusive to perhaps linger on some of the fruit of what's been forming me and knowing that it's indirectly coming out in ways I'm trying to serve and steward this community. But it is a beautiful program of 24 participants, men and women, and all of them are either pastors or in an executive role in some Christian organization. And so it really felt like a fellowship of like-hearted. And the invitation of the experience, so it was a 9-month formal journey with a beginning retreat, middle retreat, end retreat, one-day retreat every month, one spiritual direction session every month, and then a daily practice. And it sounds like a lot, but the atmosphere was receiving. I actually had a dear friend go through it who recommended me, and I texted him as I was preparing to go into the first retreat, and I said, hey, what's your counsel? How do I prepare for this? What's the orientation? What do I do? And he texted back 2 words. It was in the text read, just receive. Mm. I had no idea what to do with that. I mean, what the hell do I do with that? There is no place in my life, I'm just noticing my reaction, right? Where I come just to receive. Perhaps receive and give. He said, just receive. And it caught me off guard. I trust him. I received it. And so I came into it with a posture of I'm willing to receive. And I didn't know what I would receive, but it was a lavish feast of being known, of coming in. They understand the demands of leadership. They understand the hour in which we're in. Howard Baker, the sort of elder of the entire effort, he finished his first graduate degree the year I was born, 1976. And he's got loads of letters behind his name. And actually, I didn't find that out until well into the process because they're not really of much value to him insofar other than how they formed the man he's become. Beautiful staff of younger disciples of his that are leading it. And so I came in a posture to receive, and their counsel at the beginning to us 24 participants was this. They said, this praxis is for you. It's not for others. And so the one thing we're asking is wait until you share anything. Because you're all teachers and you're all leaders, and there's a knee-jerk reaction and some of it out of a good heart to offer what you're receiving. And they said, this is an incubator and this is a place where you're actually the priority, your life in God, and that's enough. And they drew on the desert fathers. So Henry Nouwen wrote a beautiful book, The Way of the Heart, that essentially brings the spirituality of the desert fathers. This was in the 4th and 5th century in Egypt, these men and women were escaping civilization and what they called a new form of martyrdom to understand what it was like to be stripped down of the less wild lovers, as we would say with sacred romance. And in his book, he talks about the Desert Fathers and specifically this guy, Diadochus of Fotiki. What a name.
Babe.
Man.
I got a new nickname.
Diadochus of Fotiki. What do you have to do? I guess be in a Disney movie or be from Egypt in the fourth century. But he described this image of a door of a steam bath being continually left open and the heat inside rapidly escaping through it. He said, likewise, the soul, in its desire to say many things, dissipates its remembrance of God through the door of speech, even though everything it says may be good. Mm. And so one of the images given to us was this steam bath and this idea that when the doors open, the steam is being lost, and it's okay to risk the extravagant reality of simply being loved, of receiving. And so I haven't mentioned praxis. I haven't taught on anything. I've just allowed it to incubate in me and allowed it to be the slow process of transformation. And it's still unfolding. If you wouldn't have asked me, I wouldn't have shared, because I know it will come forth, but I want it to come in my life rather than simply in my language. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a beautiful journey, and here we are today.
Yeah. Well, babe, I can attest, as someone who gets to spend just a little bit of time with you, I can attest that it has made its way through your life, and it's been just so, what's the word, kind of enticing to me. And as you know, as it goes, friends, which I know you know this from your own lives and from your own fellowships and our collective fellowship of watching someone else encountering God activate such hunger and thirst, all the more, you know, fresh hunger, fresh thirst. And so just watching your practices, your daily life, and you've always had a daily life in God. Like since before, you know, I first met you at Vanderbilt, you've had a daily life in God. And so I guess it's not that the daily life in God was new, but it seemed like what I observed was you were exploring new ways of being with God and of relating to God. And again, not that they were totally new, but you were just letting some things come to the foreground. And so I was curious if you would be willing to share about that. So, buddy, to distill the question, what shifted for you through your praxis experience?
Sure. What I appreciated was it indeed was a journey, right? We do so many intense retreats, and then the difficulty to help people find their way in their everyday life. Like Peterson says, we've said it before on the podcast, if it's biblical, it's practical. If it's practical, it's biblical. But how do we do that? We want everything to be operational. It's challenging when you have these intense, beautiful encounters with God at a retreat. And so the beauty of the nine-month rhythm, it started in a September beautiful sunny day, and we were outside, and it finished in May on another beautiful day, and we move through the seasons. And so there's something about being immersed in ideas, in community over time. And that's something with the Become Good Soil community for men, women, and couples that we are moving into because of that impact. But what I noticed, you know, in my life in God years ago in Become Good Soil, I was clinging to this idea. When a young man asked Dallas Willard, how do you spend your 15-minute quiet time? To which he responded very graciously and very slowly that God is rather unconcerned about your 15-minute quiet time. He's far more concerned with what it is you choose to do with your other 23 hours and 45 minutes. And it just arrested me because that's the real mark of a disciple, is his ordinary everyday life in God. And the throes of little kids, we don't have the luxury of the lingering monastic life in most mornings, from diapers, moving into carpool, moving into dramatic teenagers. But what's interesting is praxis aligned with actually coming back home to having the rhythm of time with God in the morning as something that I could count on most days. In other words, I've always done something, but as our kids are launching, there's this recovery of now much of my morning has a choice, and I can arrange my days to actually not only shape the 24 hours, but also be more intentional with that time. And I'm just ready for it, right? It's like returning to a great book or a great geography and feeling every age you've ever been. Today's maturity with yesterday's practices are just a decadent feast. And so as an example, I would say, Cher, there was a slowing down, far less content. And I won't tell much of the details because I want to honor the experience for those that would continue in it. But we were given a candle, and marking that sacred space, I would light that candle every morning. And it really became set apart time, not simply to study about God, but to be with him on a level I've never consistently been with before. And I notice hearing from God, conversation with God is this foundational to our kingdom life. And yet it still can exist a lot on the transactional level. You know, level one, God, I'm inviting you to bless my day. So here are my plans, and would you come into it? There's nothing wrong with that, but it is a rather immature way I operate with God. And level two, a bit deeper, is God, I have a question. Would you answer it? And it becomes deeply transactional, the vending machine God. Nothing wrong with a vending machine. Sometimes you need a Kit Kat, you put in 50 cents. But when that's your life in God, it can really begin to subconsciously make us believe falsely that we are in the driver's seat and that God operates with us according to our terms and our boundaries. And what I got to immerse myself in more this year is, what if this primary thing is God simply wants to be with me? As my spiritual director, Charlie, said in a moment of just agitation with multiple sessions, month after month of seemingly very little getting done. I get shit done. I'm good at that. I'm good at that in my faith. And this was not that. And we had accomplished very little. And I said, Charlie, what's the goal? We're spinning our wheels. What's the goal? And he smiled at me and he said, what if the goal is him and nothing more? That was really hard to receive because I want it to be something far more than that. I want it to be really measurable. Mm-hmm. I want it to be something manageable. And I notice how much my ego is still in my life in God. So for several months, I've meditated on this idea of, what if the goal is him? And what if that's more than enough? What if I have more than enough right here and right now? So I would light a candle, and what I notice, Cher, is, you know, I go through the BGS New Testament study with a lot of our listeners, and still in praxis, it was a bit too much to do a psalm every day and a reading from the New Testament. As a quantity, it doesn't seem like a lot, but as a meditative practice, I only went to that after I was with God and breathing. You know, I've done lots of different breathing techniques, but there was a technique that I got into with Praxis that is has been the most effective yet. And it's like a 5-2-7, where it's you breathe in for 5 seconds, you hold for 2, and you breathe out for 7. In for 5 seconds, hold for 2, and out for 7. And actually, rather than just simply talk about it, why don't we just practice that for a minute here? Mm-hmm. Friends, wherever you are, I'm going to invite you. Let's take a breath in for 5 seconds. Hold for 2. And out for 7 seconds. In for 5. Hold for 2. Out for 7 seconds. Try it on your own. 5, 2, and 7. A few breaths. As it says in the beginning of Lectio 365, every day, as I enter prayer now, I pause to be still, to breathe slowly, to recenter my scattered senses upon the presence of God. I think what I would say, Cher, is it's settled in my daily time with God to be defined by my friendship with God, my union with God, the goal being Him, and everything else was in the service of that. So it became more inefficient. I accomplished less. I noticed more. And I had to come to terms with things in me that had yet to die. And things in me I wasn't really comfortable with, and I really didn't want to notice. And that slow settling down allowed me to experience God and others and tune in ways that allowed me to align with a soul's portion and the soul's pace without a huge effort, rather than this like big effort of trying to push a lot of stuff out and organize time and make priorities, instead to simply begin with my breath and with this candle and with this moment and allow my senses, this embodied experience, to welcome the presence of God here and now and let it all flow from relationship.
Wow, buddy, it's so powerful. As you were talking, several things came to mind. First, as I was calling to mind John's work in Moving Mountains and his reflection on different forms of prayer, and that they're all valuable. They all have a place. You know, there are times where when we are called into that place of ruling and reigning, where we are stepping authoritatively and praying, you know, in a, you know, sort of in a very active way. And then this prayer that you have, you know, from my perspective, been practicing for decades, and as seems to be a pattern in the lives of everyone I respect, including you, Morgan, that God takes another pass at something and just simply expands it. So you've been practicing, from my perspective, just being with God for decades. And this just seemed like Father was saying, buddy, we're going to take this and we're just going to even deepen this practice even more. So it wasn't new to you. And like you said, it's just that mystery. And friends, I imagine you can know this in your own life where Father, like Morgan said, brings something to the foreground that has been a practice or been a resource, but but really expands that resource. And so I think that's what I've noticed with you. And I've noticed, and again, it just feels like it's been something Father's been doing for decades. And he used this experience to really enforce and gain more ground in this place of you being a man at rest. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what I've noticed. I'm like, oh, what is it like to be with my husband in this season? It's being with a man at rest. Mm. And, you know, we call to mind that observation Dallas makes about Jesus in the Gospels, where he asks, like, what would be an adjective to describe Christ in the Gospels? And Dallas suggests that the most apt adjective, if you had to narrow it to one, is relaxed. And as you know, I've been in the Gospels this summer through my own class at Denver Seminary, and just keen in on that, but sort of to see you come to that place where what is an adjective I describe for my husband? And as I said earlier in the podcast, earnest has always been just this outstanding aspect of your being. And now added to that is just a deep sense of restfulness and relaxed, like you are relaxed into your God. And it is also compelling.
Thanks, Sherry. Yeah, it's really interesting to notice that, Lily, to notice the change in how I feel on the inside in sort of the normal, ordinary life. And then even in a heightened time like a retreat, you know, we're just fresh off of the Become Good Soil intensive in the United Kingdom. And this was the 11th intensive over 14 years and really a culmination of a season. And the holiness to have men from 17 nations, hand select, 24 facilitators, 36 participants, and I've had this benchmark of this intensive over 14 years with similar content and similar structure, but it has changed dramatically as it sort of becomes an expression of my apprenticeship and an invitation even more curated and more distilled to men to consent to a decade of apprenticeship alongside of me and alongside of our community. And what I noticed very uniquely, like of all the intensives, this one could have the most pressure if I gave way to that. I mean, 17 different countries and international travel and language challenges. And here we were, what I would say to your point, like I had more joy than I've ever had a retreat. I've had more ease, and yet I felt more authority and more anointing, and I would say there was more impact than I've ever seen at an event. And it's just a fruit of maturing, but as I reflect back, you know, what is the fruit? There's so much fruit internally, but even the fruit in that event, I noticed that I had this growing value of uncompromising for a soul's pace, a soul's portion, and a soul's rhythm. My dream is to be able to do an intensive and then travel with that group of men for 9 months to launch a decade rather than just a 4 or 5 day retreat. But what I did was act as if that were the reality. In other words, I still offered, I stewarded the retreat and served the leadership team in a manner as though we were going to support these men for the next 9 months. In other words, I didn't overload it with content, and I was very committed to a soul's portion and a soul's pace. And just the nuances of normally in an afternoon, I would, you know, fill one last prep session, just going through my notes, really wanting to be diligent. And instead, I found myself like doing these workouts with the guys. They were doing these awesome 20-minute burpee workouts with 25 guys from England and New Zealand and Ireland, Wales and Denmark and Egypt and France. And then we did this cold plunging with 8 men, immersing ourselves in death and coming out in this resurrection. It was a real powerful rite of passage, but there were things that I just found myself enjoying the men and our team and the intimacy of the size, I scaled it back. And we were up to 83 facilitators and 83 participants at one point, and it was a big impact. But what it was losing was that relational touch and that connection with every man. And what I love is praying over every man. What I love is carrying their pictures with me for a month before the event and praying over their applications, knowing their stories, interacting with them, asking God to align me with his heart uniquely for each man and alongside of our team. And I noticed a lot of shifts, and I enjoyed God in it. I enjoyed the portion. There were times where it felt like God wanted us to linger on something, and therefore something else had to go. There was no scarcity. It didn't feel like there was hurry in us, and it was pretty open-handed. And God prevailed in ways beyond any retreat I've ever experienced. So the fruit seemed to suggest that there's something to be said with that settling in to a God that is more caring in the intimacy and yet more wild in his intervention than we have been led to believe and give permission to be so.
Amazing, buddy. Absolutely amazing. Morgan, I'm reflecting back on your share earlier in the conversation, and I noticed some emotion as you were describing that moment with your spiritual director, Charlie. And what I heard you say is that when Charlie said, "What if the only goal is him?" And as you were telling us and relaying that to us in this conversation, I noticed some emotion cross your face. And I was curious if you would be willing to share a little more about what that is for you.
Yeah. You know, I often come back to these four primary questions of initiation of who is God and who am I? What is the story and what is my frontier? And to know me, I am constantly curious about what the frontier is of my initiation. I live in that space. And as you've helped me, there's the comfort zone, challenge zone, and overwhelm zone. And it's not that there isn't a measured way. You know, we don't live in our overwhelm zone all the time. And as we get our hearts healed, we're able to be more comfortably in the challenge zone. And as I've learned in masculinity, we're not meant to be comfortable. We're meant to be comforted in order that we can risk. And that is a huge distinction. And so to enter into spiritual direction, you know, I've been through loads of counseling, but I've never had a spiritual director. And so I was all in, like the Aussies would say, boots and all. You know, I just said, I'm in. Like, whatever this is, God, I sense a green light from you. So I'm going to trust Pastor Chuck, and he's a piece of work. And he is a mystery, and his way with God is really different than me. And his language is really different than mine. And his story is very different than mine. And we're in this funky, eclectic little church in downtown Denver in a basement hole. It felt a little bit like the Oracle in the Matrix, where I go, only God would do it this way. And so I'd walk this little sort of suburban town in the middle of downtown. You know, the city's just taken it over decades ago. And I'd walk the streets before each session. And here's an example. So they were taking down a tree, a really large cottonwood, like a diameter of over 4 feet, next to this really little house in this small urban footprint of a yard. And it was precarious. And there were slices of this tree. When I say slice, like over 4 feet across, piled up.
Yes, the trunk was over 4 feet across in diameter. So the branches were probably extending like a school bus.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it enveloped this entire property. Yes. It was way bigger than the house. Yes. And they were taking this trunk down. Yes. Systematically. The guy was up in the tree hanging. And I love chainsaws and I love trees and I love firewood. And there were these huge slices. Actually, the slices were piled up in the spot where I would normally park. And I knew God had my attention. And so I'm walking the parking lot and then walking around the neighborhood just saying, okay, God, what are you saying? Like, what is this about? What's the message? And there's all kinds of parables happening with trees growing through telephone lines. And God, am I a tree that needs to be cut down? Is there pruning and the biblical metaphors? And on it goes. And I had a few senses and I could extrapolate a few things. And I walk in, so I'm standing there looking, and Charlie comes, finishes the session, comes out, puts his arm around me, and we're just looking at it together. So I go into my session, and I was just like, Charlie, I know God's saying something, and like I'm discerning, and I'm trying to sense what he's up to. And then later on in the session, Charlie said to me, what if he just wanted to enjoy that with you? What if all God was doing was knowing what you love, and there's actually nothing he's trying to say, and there's no deep biblical parable or metaphor or necessity to take something from this? What if he just likes trees too? And what if it's just a gift to be with him in this moment? And Sherry, it was just, it was disruptive because it's exposing a level of relationship that I don't normally operate with God. I do a lot for God and I do things with God in the service of others. But that deep friendship and even the reciprocity, you know, there was this holy time during Lent where they took us into the suffering of Christ and reminded us in the gospel in Mark when it says the women tended to the needs of Jesus, that actually Jesus has needs. And even the story where the cup of cold water and he says, whatever you do to the least of my people, you do for me. Like you literally did this for me. And this revelation of what if God has allowed himself to have need, and what if we can minister to God? Like, what if it matters to just draw close, to let it be enough to cultivate a deeper knowing and being known by God? So I think what struck me in the spiritual direction was it was painfully inefficient. We spun our wheels. I was ready to quit so many times. And in the end, what it really exposed was the spiritual direction is among other things, simply a mirror. And it's a holy way to see ourselves in ways that we can't see ourselves without the help of a friend. And in the end of 9 months, there was more transformation, more breakthrough. I think I'd say more deliverance, more integration than I could have ever imagined. But it happened at a different cadence and a different methodology. And it really expanded what my capacity for believing what God is like.
Mm. Wow. Powerful, buddy.
Mo, as we bring this conversation to a close, I was thinking and reflecting back on what you opened with about the heart of Become Good Soil and the idea that everything, we long for everything to be operational. And so I'm putting myself in the shoes or the seat or the space of our listeners, our allies, our friends, and wondering if I were being enticed, which I am, by what you're sharing, what would be some way I can operationalize what you're bringing to my attention today?
Yeah, that's a great, kind question. And I think there are two words that come by way of consideration.
Mm-hmm.
The first would be overflow. Mm-hmm. And the second would be noticing.
Mm.
So maybe I'll offer a thought on overflow, and then we'll conclude with noticing. And Sherry, I would love to actually turn it back to you and invite you to lead us in a meditation on noticing out of something I'd like to share in surprise with you. I haven't told you about this from Henry Nouwen, his book, Out of Solitude.
Mm-hmm.
So on overflow, early in the praxis experience, we were given an image, a beautiful piece of artwork of a reservoir. And we were invited to consider the power of a reservoir, the role of a reservoir, the elemental nature of it, the implications of it, the design, and what God might be wanting to bring to our attention through a daily practice of meditating over this image. And we were introduced back to the quote from St. Bernard of Clairvaux that we've referred to many times in this work, that a man who is wise, therefore, will see his life as more like a reservoir than a canal. The canal simultaneously pours out what it receives. The reservoir retains the water until it is filled, and then discharges the overflow without loss to itself. Today, there are many in the church who act like canals. The reservoirs are far too rare. You too must learn to await this fullness before pouring out your gifts. Do not try to be more generous than God. I think one of the deep gifts of the experience was the conviction that was cultivated more and more that all true Christian leadership is overflow, period. That leadership is overflow. And so my question that I sat with for 9 months, I continue to sit with, and my question to our friends is, what is the condition of your soul if it were to embody the metaphor of a reservoir or a canal? What does it look like to allow the reservoir to be filled with increasing measure, to allow new ecosystems to be saturated with life as the level of the reservoir rises? And what would it be like to retain water in a measure where the overflow happens without loss to itself? As it comes in, it goes out with the same pace, but rather than simply canal, it's from a place of abundance, a place of well-being, a place of saturation, a place of fullness, likened to something like John chapter 4 and just the compelling story where Jesus is with the woman at the well. And it's a very vulnerable situation. And this is a woman with deep need. And he can say to her, there is a thirst in you that can be quenched forever. That you literally have a thirst, that there is something that can satisfy it, and you will thirst no more. And even more, that quenching can become a spring within you that flows out to others unceasingly. Would you like that gift? What would it look like for your leading, your loving, your mission, your work in the world to be simply overflow? Where are you at? And what is God wanting to reveal to you in that? And then I think the second word, if there's one word from my praxis experience that has utterly changed my thinking on God and my spiritual practices, it's the word notice. I'm trying to use it more and more. I'm trying to bring it to my attention that I'm a man of action and we feel better doing something. But I realize that doing is simply a byproduct of being, and being begins with noticing. Noticing brings us into the present moment, and the present moment is where God wants to meet with us. And so this word of what am I noticing about myself, about God, about the nature of reality, it's actually a very holy spiritual discipline to practice noticing. And that's slowed me down, and it's actually been resuscitating in ways. And even that knee-jerk reaction, whatever it is, that shift of what if we were to slow down enough to notice, why do I feel the way I feel? Why do I say what I say? Why do I not say what I do not say? And just simply beginning to notice.
Mm-hmm. Buddy, I notice as you've been talking, there's some part of me that wants to sort of talk you out of the language that these things are new for you. Because I'm even reflecting on Become Good Soil and Becoming a King. And, you know, you talk about a habits and habitat. And I'm curious, why do I want to kind of protest and be like, but buddy, you've been practicing all these things. Like I'm thinking about enjoying God and watching you tell me stories with your face and your countenance bright about a tumbleweed that Father would give you that was just for joy. So I think I'm kind of, I feel as I'm noticing myself, kind of feel that I'm also like Father. What I see is that our Father has brought these things into the foreground in this season that yes. He had seeded
yes.
for decades. And He's harvesting something in you that He has been cultivating for your entire apprenticeship. And really, since you began to inquire, you know, as you approach 30, that you talk about in opening Becoming a King, just like that all wasn't well under the waterline, if you will, and that you know, on the outside this, but in the inside you were feeling anxious, you were not feeling abundance. So even your practice of noticing, you've practiced noticing so much, and from that has flowed all of your work. And I don't want to deflate or diminish the reality of how much harvesting from yeah. what God has grown for 20 years, as far as I'm concerned, of your practices. It's like it's little by little and all at once.
Right.
It's like it's been little by little, but then something about what Father's doing in your life right now brought a lot of this, like a big old harvest.
Yes.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's actually really helpful, because I think it's reminding me we need each other, and we grow in community if we grow at all. You know, one of the big revelations 2 years ago is we're wounded in isolation and we're healed through relationship, period. Our wounding, I believe, is always an isolating event, and our healing always has a relational element, even relationship with God, relationship with parts within us, relationship with people. And so I think it's really helpful for you to reflect back the tumbleweed and go, oh yeah, right, there was that simple enjoyment. And yet what I notice is it's a deeper level.
Mm-hmm.
It's the next level
mm-hmm.
where I don't want to take for granted, like God did something back in that day. But even this morning, you know, we had a disagreement about some tough things. And as I watch myself in that disagreement, I notice my embodied reaction was totally different than it would have been 9 months ago. There was a slowing down. There was a checking in with myself, noticing the part of me that wants to defend, noticing the part of me that actually feels like you're right, and you're calling something out, and I feel sad about that, and actually being okay with just noticing those things and not trying to put a bow on it, because there's a new level of something inside of me of being okay.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm loved.
Mm-hmm.
I know you want the best for me. You know you're loved, and you know I want the best for you. and we're in the best place we've ever been in our marriage. And so we're okay. And I left the house and we actually haven't circled back to unpack that. But it's just an example mm-hmm. of these are not new mm-hmm. Waters per se, but they are on new levels mm-hmm. of stepping deeper into frontier, deeper risks, engaging impossibilities being made possible on deeper levels than I ever have, but they're building on what God has mm-hmm. accomplished. Mm-hmm. And so it does really seem like a both and. Mm-hmm. And with that, it feels like there's a lot of hope.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thanks, bud.
So with that in mind, friends, Sherry, thank you for providing a context for me to give some reflections. Mm-hmm. I hope and pray that some of these ideas, which are universal for all of us, available to all of us in our context. I'd like to finish with a reflection. One of the books I've been drawn to recently, which I immersed myself in probably 20 years ago, mm-hmm. but I was led back to it by another spiritual director I'm spending time with. It's a book by Henry Nouwen titled Out of Solitude. And I wanted to read a few words to you from Out of Solitude by a way of sort of bridging my praxis experience to you in your world on this day. And so, Sherry, what I'd love to do is read a piece of this reflection and then invite you to prayerfully guide us wherever you would want to lead us. Mm-hmm. Would you be willing to begin our reflection with inviting our listeners into Mark chapter 1, verse 32 through 39?
That evening after sunset, they brought to him all who were sick and those who were possessed by devils. The whole town came crowding round the door, and he cured many who were suffering from diseases of one kind or another. He also cast out many devils, but he would not allow them to speak because they knew who he was. In the morning, long before dawn, he got up and left the house and went off to a lonely place and prayed there. Simon and his companions set out in search of him, and when they found him, they said, "Everybody is looking for you." He answered, "Let us go elsewhere, to the neighboring country towns, so that I can preach there too, because that is why I came." And he went all through Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and casting out devils.
Henry Nouwen offers these words. In the morning, long before dawn, he got up and left the house and went off to a lonely place and prayed there. In the middle of sentences loaded with action, healing suffering people, casting out devils, responding to impatient disciples, traveling from town to town and preaching from synagogue to synagogue, we find these quiet words. In the morning, long before dawn, he got up and left the house and went off to a lonely place and prayed there. In the center of breathless activities, we hear a restful breathing. Surrounded by hours of moving, we find a moment of quiet stillness. In the heart of much involvement, there are words of withdrawal. In the midst of action, there is contemplation. After much togetherness, there is solitude. The more I read this nearly silent sentence locked in between the loud words of action, the more I have the sense that the secret of Jesus' ministry is hidden in that lonely place where he went to pray early in the morning, long before dawn. In the lonely place, Jesus finds the courage to follow God's will and not his own, to speak God's words and not his own, to do God's work and not his own. He reminds us constantly, I can do nothing by myself. My aim is to do not my own will, but the will of him who sent me. And again, the words I say to you, I do not speak as from myself. It is the Father living in me who is doing the work. It is in the lonely place where Jesus enters into intimacy with the Father that his ministry is born. I want to reflect on this lonely place in our lives. Somewhere we know that without a lonely place, our lives are in danger. Somewhere we know that without silence, words lose their meaning. That without listening, speaking no longer heals. That without distance, closeness cannot cure. Somewhere we know that without a lonely place, our actions quickly become empty gestures. The careful balance between silence and words, withdrawal and involvement, distance and closeness, solitude and community forms the basis of the Christian life and should therefore be the subject of our most personal attention. It is not so difficult to see that in our particular world, we all have a strong desire to accomplish something. Some of us think in terms of great dramatic changes in the structure of society. Others want at least to build a home, write a book, invent a machine, or win a trophy. And some of us seem to be content when we just do something worthwhile for someone. But practically, all of us think about ourselves in terms of a contribution to life. When we've sold our identity to the judges of this world, we are bound to become restless because of a growing need for affirmation and praise. Indeed, we are tempted to become low-hearted because of a constant self-rejection, and we are in serious danger of becoming isolated since friendship and love are impossible without mutual vulnerability. To live a Christian life means to live in the world without being of it. It is in solitude that this inner freedom can grow. Jesus went to a lonely place to pray, that is, to grow in the awareness that all the power he had was given to him, that all the words he spoke came from his Father, and that all the works he did were not really his, but the works of the one who had sent him. In the lonely place, Jesus was made free to fail. In solitude, we can slowly unmask the illusion of our possessiveness and discover in the center of our own self that we are not what we can conquer, but what is given to us. In solitude, we can listen to the voice of him who spoke to us before we could speak a word, who healed us before we could make any gesture to help, who set us free long before we could free others, and who loved us long before we could give love to anyone. It is in this solitude that we discover that being is more important than having, and that we are worth more than the results of our efforts. In solitude, we discover that our life is not a possession to be defended, but a gift to be shared. It's there we recognize that the healing words we speak are not just our own, but are given to us. That the love we express is part of a greater love, and that the new life we bring forth is not a property to cling to, but a gift to be received. When you are able to create a lonely place in the middle of your actions and concerns, your successes and failures slowly can lose some of their power over you. For then your love for this world can merge with a compassionate understanding of its illusions. And then your serious engagement can merge with an unmasking smile. Then your concern for others can be motivated more by their needs than your own. In short, then you can care. Let us therefore live our lives to the fullest, but let us not forget to once in a while get up long before dawn, leave the house, and go to a lonely place.
Father, Jesus, Holy Spirit, I'm picturing being on a hillside with our brothers and sisters around the world, gathered across space and time, and yet one God, one of one family, of one community, one in you and one with you. And Father, I am picturing alongside my brothers and sisters, closing my eyes and receiving you. God, as Morgan said, you are the prize. You are the goal. You are the gift. And having a heart and a life, having received a heart and a life to join with yours, God, is an indescribable gift from you who are the gift. And so, God, we take our place as a community at rest, a community of brothers and sisters learning to relax into your care, a community cultivating the interior freedom of knowing that we come from you and are returning to you. And God, are in you in a mysterious comprehensiveness and soundness that is beyond articulation. And so, Father, as a community, we reconsecrate ourselves to the path of prayer. A path of pausing in solitude and stillness, that we might become those who listened to your voice, that spoke to us before we could speak a word, who healed us before we could make any gesture to help, who set us free long before we could free others, and who loved us long before we could give love to anyone. So, Father, thank you for the journey that we are all on together, the journey of more of us belonging to more of you. Thank you for the renewal movement in our age, Father, the movement of spiritual formation, if you will, that is marking this era of the body of Christ in the 21st century, God. This wellspring of formation, of you drawing humans to recover, God, the way. We're so happy, Father, as a community to be a part. We look to you, God. So, Papa, fill us. Help us to reservoir in you. Help us to become a fellowship of ones who are saturated. Ones whose souls feast. On you and with you. Ones who minister to your needs. Who enter into a place of friendship, God. More delicate and delightful and tender than any other relationship in our lives. Thank you, Lord. Thank you for what you have drawn my husband into. Thank you, God. I imagine you doing parallel work in the lives of our brothers and sisters around the globe. So as one, we thank you that you are drawing us more deeply into Jesus. Thank you for this moment, God. In your name, Jesus, our rabbi, our teacher, our king, our brother, our friend, in your name, amen.